Hi, everybody. Welcome to Paul Lisnik Behind the Curtain, our opportunity to step into the world of theater and the arts every week. And today, we're going to go to a very familiar face, I think, that a lot of you know because of an incredibly popular show that's been on HBO for 3 seasons. I think it should have a fourth. All right, not my decision. But also coming to Chicago to appear here in a one-person show, although I think you've got some assistance here. Let me introduce you to Murray Hill, Mr. Showbiz, as you're often referred to. And, you know, I kept thinking, wasn't Mr. Showbiz Liberace? No, he was Mr. Showmanship. You actually have that name down. It's yours.
Yeah, I'm the only one that's crazy enough to call myself Mr. Showbiz.
Your career has been so varied. Let's kind of talk about, if we can, somebody somewhere at first, because it is just where so many people have come to learn about you. I've known of you for many years. I've seen you perform, so I'm different. But there's a lot of people who went, wait a minute, that's Fred Rococo from Somebody Somewhere. It is. Can you just give me a reaction to that show? What a gift to humankind.
You know, that's the perfect word for it. It is a gift because, you know, I travel all over the country and doing shows and doing appearances and things. And you know what? And even at the Emmys, because I was just at the Emmys with Jeff and Bridget a couple weeks ago. And I mean,
yeah, they had you on camera. Now that you say that, they had you on camera.
Yeah. So every single, you know, like big star, right? Like big star would come up to us and be like, oh my God, that show meant so much to us. So it's like, we're getting that, but then we're getting, you know, I get a lot of like parents come up to me and say, you know, my kid's trans and this show meant so much to them. So it really felt like a gift for people that have like dealt with hard times, and it made them feel good. And a lot of people said the show was a balm for their soul. So I think it was a gift to the audience, but it was also a gift to us because, you know, people say this about the show, but they commented on our chemistry and that we were so real and seemed like friends, and we are friends. But, you know, we're all in our 50s, and this was our big break, all of us. So it was a gift to us.
I know Jeff and Bridget were friendly ahead of time. Did you all three of you know each other ahead of time?
Oh, I've been friends with Bridget so long that she can't stand me every once in a while.
So, yeah. And I know, and Jeff has told the story, I think it's in his book as well, of course, about, you know, getting that phone call to come do it. I don't know that anybody, when it first started, because, you know, it comes, the show itself, Somebody Somewhere, you can still watch it on HBO, all 3 seasons. And there's this sense of it just being kind of this down home family, Waltons with a twist, kind of a show. What is it about that show, do you think? And you've already said it has a lot of meaning for certain people, but the appeal is so much broader than that. I mean, I watched an episode or two and boom, I'm hooked. What was it about that show that brought us in?
Well, I think that it shows the heart and humanity first. And it's a very simple show in that it's not like, you know, tons of, you know, AI generated stuff. It's not these complex sets or huge budget. It's, you know, a group of people in middle America who are bonding together basically because of their differences, and they become a chosen family. So they all feel a sense of belonging. And I think that's a very human feeling to have. And, you know, this country and this world is so crazy for a while now that it just kind of, it's like stripped away all the crap. And it was just like, hey, this is about chosen family and friendship. And, you know, even though there was some, you know, sad things in the show, it was, in a sense, feel good. So I think people, you know, a lot of people said they needed that show. So I think people resonated because of the heart. We all have big, you know, hearts on our sleeves.
I think that's it. And as much as that's true for everybody, you've got to give a shout out to Bridget Everett on that, because she just, right? I mean, she sets the tone. She sets the emotion for everything. Of course, it was special for us here because while people around the country or maybe around the world think it was set in Kansas or something like that, Murray, you were just up the street in Lamont, Illinois.
I know. And you know what's wonderful is that, you know, we filmed in Lamont, but Jeff and I stayed in Naperville. So, you know, it's a small city, but it was right. The biggest city that was near where we were filming.
But
so
no, Naperville's grown amazingly.
Yeah, no, it's and we went to like the, what is it called, the Toad House or something, and there's a coffee shop there. But, you know, so we would be filming and then people would see us in town and be like, what are you guys doing here? We're 20 minutes down the street. And they were just like, so we were like these big stars in Chicago. It was wonderful.
Well, you're big stars everywhere. You just happen to be in Chicago where it was filming, which was so cool. And of course, when you talk about sadness, my mind went to the real life situation of losing Mike, who played Bridget's father. What's really cool about, nothing was cool about his death, I don't mean that, but I mean, he was well known in Second City and all of that. But what I found really interesting was when he passed, there might have been some shows and some writers that said, well, we'll just have to write him out, and that's just the way it goes. And you guys were not willing to do that.
No, because, you know, first of all, he's such an incredible talent. And, you know, we all looked up to him because we're all comedians, right? None of us grew up as actors or were trained as actors. We were comedians. And especially Jeff and I, we did a lot of improv. So we knew him. We knew Second City. And, you know, he's been in every movie that you could possibly think of. So we just had so much respect for him. And then when we got to meet him, he was so down to earth. He was so grateful. And like, this was his favorite job because he was able to show a range of what he could do. It wasn't just telling jokes or being, you know, the sidekick friend. He was a three-dimensional character, just like the rest of us. And
Well,
none of us had had a chance to do that either. So we really fell in love with him. And I think like one of that scene that I had with him in the first season out in the field, you know, that's the highlight of my career. And I had that kind of, my shrink would call it transference. He was so in the moment and in character that I lost myself, that I was like, oh, wait, I'm not doing a script. I was like really there, really Fred Rococo. Like he brought that out of me. And then I was so moved by his gentleness and his kindness that I was just like, ooh. I mean, that's like that's the magic of show business.
yeah. What's also nice is when the show wraps, the good news is you all knew it was wrapping. So season three and that final scene and kind of that restaurant bar sort of situation, just, and I didn't ask Jeff about this, but what was the emotion in that? You know, and you probably filmed it out of order anyway, right? You probably didn't film that as the last scene, but you knew that's the last scene. Was there something magical going on between you knowing this is going to be it as far as the viewing audience sees?
Well, so it's funny because that scene was the first day on set. So we really did it backwards. So, you know, the emotion it came later. But you know, we didn't know at that point that it was going to be the
I was going to
very
say, you didn't, yeah, you didn't know that.
No, we didn't know. It was a little bit later after we shot. But so, you know, with television and the strikes and the fires and you know, all this corporate merging, you know, we've always said this from the beginning, especially me, Jeff, and Bridget. We were just happy to get one season. We couldn't believe that we got a second season. And then we really couldn't believe we got a third. So the fact that we even got one and two and three is a damn miracle. So, you know, so we didn't quite know what was going to go on because, you know, we've been a slow burn. Like more people, and even more people have discovered the show now than they did since before the Emmys.
Yeah.
It's been a very delayed kind of, you know, audience building. So you never know, right? Because High Maintenance, that show on HBO, ran for 5 seasons, but not a lot of people watched it as far as numbers go. So we didn't really have any idea. But once we found out that it was the end, you know, then that was very emotional.
And who knows? You never know. I mean, you know, with the reruns and everything, all of a sudden HBO wake up. I know it's not your guys' decision, but all of a sudden it's we need a season four, or we need a wrapping movie
Yeah,
that comes back to
keep
kind of bring
talking
it
about
all.
the movie. I'll tell you
Yeah.
that.
All right. Well,
And
if you need
yeah,
someone to
the fans
play,
want more.
okay. What's
They
that?
really do. The fans want more.
There's no question, and I think you'll need somebody to play like an older than middle-aged father to somebody.
Done.
I'll be Fred's dad.
Yeah. Too
So let us shift gears here.
old to
Thank you
play
for
Fred's dad.
thank you for letting me go through all of that because I so love that show. Let's talk about your visit to Chicago Sunday, November 9th at the Den Theater at 7:15. I love that they do shows at 7:15. I said the same thing to Hiller. What's with the 7:15? 7:30, 7, but 7:15. Kind of quirky. But there's going to be, and so you're doing Murray Hill live in person. It is not just a stand-up act. I mean, your music, your everything.
You know, well, first of all, I got to the Den Theater because I hosted two shows there for Jeff for his book release party. And I absolutely loved the vibe of that room. There were tons of Somebody Somewhere fans. The audience was so fantastic and the venue was so great that I'm like, I want to go back as soon as possible and bring my show there. Because I've done a lot of hosting of shows in Chicago for probably 25 years or so.
That's kind of a lot of what you do. You're like a famous MC.
Yeah, I cut my teeth on the MCing, and this show, you know, it's very much we're similar in age. The young kids won't know this, but you know, I do a very much of a Las Vegas lounge kind of show, like Don Rickles and Shecky Green and Toadie Fields, Mel Barth, Rusty Warren, people that no one has heard of anymore. But you know, I have a band. And I come out, I sing a little. I'm not a great singer, but I come out, I do a little singing, I do some crowd work, tell a couple stories, do another song. You know, it's a very interactive show. And it's not like, I'm not like a punchline comic, you know, like where you go to a stand-up club and they're going to tell you the jokes no matter what. And if you don't like them, they get mad at you. This is like, you know, I'm old school. I read the room. We're going to have fun. And you know, and I've been calling these sanctuary shows. You know, you can be gay. You're not going to get deported. You can do whatever the hell you want. You can go to whatever bathroom you want. We're here for joy as resistance, and we're just going to have fun for 2 hours. Nothing more.
And there's some crowd work in there. So that you mentioned Don Rickles, of course. So my mind went right there. But so people are in the audience. Let's just be honest. Who say, oh wait, I hope he doesn't call on me. Whatever. How comfortable can I be in the audience?
Well, that's the thing. I think sometimes people, because the crowd work today is mean spirited, you know, we know that. And like a lot of these roasts, the Dean Martin roasts from yesteryear were never mean spirited. They would, you know, they would hit below the knee every once in a while, but it was always in a warm, you know,
respectful way. And they were all friends. They were always friends.
Exactly. And then now it's kind of crass. But so, you know, I'm more aligned with the old school, whereas, you know, I'm going to, you know, tease the audience and stuff. But for an example, like there'll be three gay men or four gay men sitting at a table in the front. And I'll say, fellas, so great to see you. We're the wives tonight. It's, hey, we're both on the same team. We know what's up. But that's where the joke comes from. Not as, you know, yo, you're gay, bad. No, no. It's like, yeah, you know, it's lighthearted camp. So no one needs to be worried about the audience.
And the great part about the den is there's a bar, order some drinks. I always have the popcorn. And have you had the popcorn? It's really good popcorn there.
Oh, yeah. They have chips. They got popcorn. They got hot dogs.
Fantastic. So that's going to be good. Let me tell people about that, because a couple of other things I want to talk to you about, like you have a new autobiography coming out. Hiller has one. You should have one. So we're going to talk about that. So the show Murray Hill Live in Person is at the Den Theater. We'll put this on the page, but if people need to know, 1331 North Milwaukee Avenue. The tickets are at thedentheater.com. Theater spelled the proper British way, T-R-E. And one show only, so you don't want to miss it. At the Den Theater, parking is tough in the area, but once you get in there, man, what a great environment and what a great place that is to be. So I can't wait. Tickets are, man, $35 you can get in. And if you're willing to sit behind an obstructed view, it's only $30. That's not bad. I don't know about the obstruction. But anyway, there's also a VIP.
I'm the obstructed view.
And there's a meet and greet. People can meet with you and talk to you, and they get a little tchotchke and take a picture with you after the show. So you want to get a chance to see Murray Hill live in person. It is Sunday, November 9th, 7:15, thedentheater.com. But Murray, stay with me, because we're going to take a little break. We're going to come back. I want to talk about your autobiography, because you've been around for a while, and I want people to know about more what's coming up in 2026. It's just around the corner. Hang with us. We'll be right back after these words.
Showbiz.
And we are back on Paul Listen Behind the Curtain. I'm still visiting with the great Murray Hill, Mr. Showbiz, as they say, who you can see at the Den Theater, November 9th. Tickets at thedentheater.com. One show only at 7:15 p.m. But Murray, while I have you here, you know, Jeff Hiller did an autobiography, and he was on the show to talk about it. Now, his title of his book is something along the lines of a middle-aged woman or drag queen or something like that in his title. Your book coming out next year is Mr. Showbiz, My Life as a Middle-Aged Man. Was there any coordination in terms of book titles between you and him?
Well, it's funny because, I don't know if, Jeff is a very good boy. As you know, he's perfect.
Yes.
So I hooked him up with my lit agent, and then he got a book deal, and then he wrote his book and finished it, and it came out before I finished mine. So
Oh, so
my
there's
book.
tension.
Yes, it is, because he's making me look bad. So I'm literally like, I'm at my desk right now. I have 5 days to finish my second draft, and that's it.
Oh.
So his original title was going to be, what was it? Oh, the middle-aged ingenue. Okay. So we were very similar, but then what
Yeah.
he landed on was an actress of a certain age. It's funny because when Jeff and I were living together in Naperville during the filming of Somebody Somewhere, Jeff likes to go for walks, so we're always going for walks. And Jeff is like 8 feet tall,
I was going to say, when I
very
first met him,
skinny.
I'm like, whoa.
No, he's out of control. And I'm 5'4" and wide. So we would be walking around the street, and like the visuals of us together, we look like Ren and Stimpy or Tom and Jerry. Like people didn't know it. So we would make these jokes because sometimes there's red parts of the neighborhoods that we were in. We would pretend that we were a couple, but he was the woman and I was the man. So to answer your question, yes, there's some synergy with the titles.
I will tell you, and I told him, I got confused when I read his book because every chapter, as you know, looked like it was written by Drew Barrymore or somebody like that. So I'm like reading, I'm in like chapter three. I'm going, what is he doing? And then of course I realized that was just a gimmick. Are you
It's
doing
not even
anything
close.
like that? Are you having it? Are we gonna see a gimmick in your book of anything like that?
No, but not so much a gimmick, because that's pretty much the whole act. Hey, here all night. I'm going to kind of MC the book.
Ah, okay.
So, there's five acts in the book. So each at the start of each act, I'm going to kind of introduce it like I would be introducing a show.
Gotcha.
But it goes all so basically it's an origin story of how I came up with this persona and how I started, and then it kind of ends on Somebody Somewhere, and then the bonus chapters that, and I'm sure you're Cubs fans or White Sox.
To the extent sports, Cubs.
Yeah, so I threw out the first pitch at a Mets game.
Oh, okay. Wow.
So that's where the book ends. So I come from this androgynous person that had grew up in a very conservative family, dealt with discrimination my entire life, still do constantly. So I started there, and then I ended up on Sunday nights on HBO and throwing out the pitch on the Mets. So it's really a tale of survival.
And that you now that you say that, because I think of like Murray Hill and what you do, whatever. And I mean, to be honest, it's like a who cares who you are? Of course, you're just doing your bit. But you're right. When you began back in the 90s, and that's when I first saw you, I don't remember having a reaction in any way that was anything but great at the time. But at the same time, that was a tougher time for you, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. We're going back to the 50s now, politically. But yeah, I mean, I think something in my career from the beginning, which is 30 plus years ago now, I've always been like the only one, right? The only one like this that does something like this. And now, there's more drag kings. There was a King of Drag show, which I hosted earlier this year. So there's more drag kings, right? And more trans men and on TV and stuff. But as far as I'm 53, so I'm still like the only one that's made it this far. So if you think about how far drag queens have come and gay men, right? And then it's just so not equal at all. So it was hard in the 90s, and it's still hard now, but it's slowly happening. I filmed the Kelly Clarkson show today. So that's pretty mainstream.
And you're doing a thing. I don't know if it's shot already, but you're doing a thing with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
That's being edited. I did a Christmas movie.
Of
I had a
course you
couple
did.
scenes with him. I know it was
Is it Twins 2?
it should be. It's called Man with the Bag. There's a joke in there somewhere.
Right.
The
Well,
man with the two bags.
And to look at your credit, I mean, you've been a correspondent, guest correspondent with ABC News and covering event. I mean, you really have whatever the barriers are. People can look at young people, can look at you and say, I can do it.
Yep. And, you know, a lot of the young kids ask me, like, what's the secret to my longevity? And, you know, in a way, it's very simple. I just haven't given up.
Well, and that might be the answer to the question I wanted. I'm not going to ask you the longevity question, but here's what I do want to ask you in replacement of that, which is going back to the tough times, a lot of people would have given up or said, this battle ain't worth it. What is it in Murray Hill that had you go, I'm fighting this to the end?
Well, you know, because it's a mantra that I always say, and it's, if you don't see yourself represented, go out and represent yourself. So when I first started, I really wanted to have the same visibility and equality as everybody else. So that mission has not been complete. So I've never given it up.
And, is it easier today? I mean, today you get cast with Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, and all these other, so many other things people can look you up. Is it easier? Do people, when you hit, whether it's a casting agent, whoever it is, do they go, well, yeah, Murray Hill. So we have a Murray Hill role.
I wouldn't say it's easier, but I think because of Somebody Somewhere and how really the fans and the press really reacted to that show, that has opened doors for me to go have meetings where it's, so I don't have to explain myself and my existence as much. You know, I've always heard my whole career is, you're too niche. We don't know what to do with you. You know, you're original. Everybody loves you, but we got nothing. You know, so
now there is
a different level.
Did it also impact you when Jeff won the Emmy? But two quick questions. He was surprised. I mean, based on my conversations with him, but
we all were.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's like everybody knows he deserved it. But was there a sense of, I really can't believe this happened? And did that make a difference for you and, of course, him going forward?
Yes, I think the biggest thing was, you know, he totally deserved it. And I think the Emmy was for his body of work. And the way that the show is and the way that people reacted to us and me, Bridget, and Jeff is, you know, he won and we all won. And when I say we all won, it's the whole cast, but it's also every single person who has felt disenfranchised, who has felt like a misfit or othered. So it's like, you know, the little guy won. So and that's why there's such a beautiful reaction of the people that didn't win the Emmy. I don't know if you remember that. Michael Urie, Coleman Domingo, they flipped out. And that's,
yes,
to me, I mean, do you ever see that in Hollywood?
No, like, you saw it that night. The losers praised the winner. They like couldn't have been happier for him. And of course, Jeff himself, and we've talked about it as you have, but this notion of, you know, he says people think I'm an overnight success. You know, he's a 25-year overnight success.
Yeah,
you know,
lots
struggling
of overnights.
Lots of overnights exactly to get there. Well, I'm just so happy that both of you, you're here and moving forward. We've got a wrap, but I hope to see you in Chicago, where I would love to give you this gift of the Paul Lissick Behind the Curtain mug, which viewers can get, by the way, at WGNTV.com/store, where they can buy it. You can also get a shower curtain, Murray, and a skateboard. That this is actually on a skateboard. So it really is. I'll get you that as well.
I'll get all three. I'll have a coffee, take a shower, and be on the skateboard at the same time.
On the way on the skateboard, off you go. And a jigsaw puzzle. Do that when you're back, because they have that as well. You can see Murray Hill at the Den Theater on Sunday, November 9th at 7:15 p.m. Tickets at thedentheatertre.com. Murray Hill, you're a treasure. You're a joy. Thanks for being with me.
Showbiz, and don't give up.
You got it. We'll see you all next week. I'm Paul Lissick Behind the Curtain. Thanks for joining us.